about the tattooing on the skin here.
That's so much.
On the women. But also that some of the Siberian women had more tattooing out here on the cheek. Like this?
No, from the mouth, they just
a V line that went from the edge of the corner of the mouth up and then down along the cheek.
So you see that picking down the stairs and that tear of shop?
Yes.
On this side?
Yes.
The woman sitting down on top of the ice?
Yes.
With the naked?
Yes.
And the fellow was with those pictures in his name. Keep it down on motion.
Yes.
And he seen that himself and drew the picture of it.
Oh.
And they come to that ice, and they're looking for Ugru. They thought there might be some Ugru on land and right in the middle of that ice. They climb up on those rough ice, and they see that lady sitting down. The way they see he drew it, with the hair hanging down on the back, but no clothes. But they didn't notice he had her feet in the water, like that, feet in the water. And so they didn't go over, they might see something happen if they let her know. So they just get away before she noticed them.
Well, now,
the way they start, in Siberian coast, when a young lady become a woman, they always put the tattoo on her.
Right over there?
All over. I've seen a lot of it. And then, when the young lady,
they mark their arms too, with straight lines or
just made on an anchor or some animal to their body. So it's like they were the easy of breathing and giving the animal easier, I guess, or something. And the mark, I've seen a lot of Eskimo ladies, they have a mark like that.
Yeah.
And then they put one up here, quite small.
Small enough between the eyebrows.
One little line.
One little line between the eyebrows.
Maybe 2 feet needle hole.
Ah.
The mark is made out of the charcoal.
Yeah.
And
sinew.
They tap it to the sinew and then work it through. And then another one on. And then that mark for life.
Mm-hmm.
For life.
Go ahead, Paul.
And then when the young lady, when she become a woman, when they didn't put tattoo on her, she started going out to the ocean. Sometimes they never catch the lady because she can run faster than anybody and she just will shoot right straight out to the ocean. That's how those women stayed on the ocean. They're still alive and the one Kipitora Moses fell, she's the one that run out from Siberian coast. But no, they said no woman goes out from this side.
Ellis Smith was also saying that she's heard stories where if the young ladies aren't tattooed, they are told that they get restless to the point where, like he says, they go out to sea, you know. But if they tattoo them, then they return normal. And this is on the Siberian women. But she says she's never heard it from people on this side.
Very good. I'll have to go down and get a picture of that drawing of Moses.
He puts the wrong side of the counter, see, on this side. And there were three men, James Moses and two others from Sesmira. They went out with a steamboat. On the front of the Sesmira, they saw a big ice. They go down there and they come to the ice. And one fellow go up on top of the ice first. And he looked and put his head in, turn around and wave to those other fellows. And they come. And they all stand up and look at it. They use gloves or canagra. They look at his right toes, just like you will write those to me. Just like that, they Dennis Morgan is Spencer, the one he's a printer, you know. He took that picture. He looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
So after a while, when he become an artist, he think about that and go. So that's the way he tell it, he said.
Hmm.
And I had a bunch of those pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So then we used to draw it. Then we used to sell them. When I was by summer there for a while, I used to sell those pictures for $1 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sell somebody selling it for a
piece.
Mm-hmm. I made quite a few dollars. One time I nearly got $1,000 in my cash register when a lot of people come from the state.
And the tourist came.
The tourist.
Uh-huh. Very good.
The Greek women in Kotzebue making those stuff with the tourists like, they, it's time now to make it. Just not when the tourists come in. Because tourists like to have those things. What the Eskimo mean? They go up there, when somebody sent it, that stuff from another village, they sold them here. When they sent it to the person, last summer, somebody handed me 10 mats made out of a bone. It wasn't in good shape either. And he told me, sell these for $30 a piece. And I sold every one of them to tourists. Some of them take two. And besides that, I sold my book to tourists.
Mm-hmm.
The winter time is pretty slow for selling my book. But in the summertime, I ordered 100 books. In the week time, they're gone. I sell my books for $5 to the tourists.
Mm-hmm.
My lawyer told me to sell it for $5.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good picture.
And I got a letter again another day from Lucky and his wife. And they said, magazine people like to have your picture. Your dancing picture. If you have some, please send to us. So I sent them before. I never heard anything yet from them again when they got it, but they got it. That Letterman and his wife, they're going to come up this spring, June.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote me a letter.
I have a letter from them today. I haven't read it yet.
Mm-hmm. So you tell them I was with the group, with that little people group.
I will.
And tell them that my daughter died 2 days ago.
I wrote them last night and told them,
mm-hmm.
So they know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Let's ask... the other day, we were talking about looking at ahead at the future. Is there any way that Eskimos could foretell or could see what was ahead 1 week, 2 weeks ahead of time? Going to get sick?
You know that Mr. Moore could be sick. He's one of them.
Yeah.
He's the one that told me. I told you already.
Yeah.
About the caribou. Going to come back,
yeah.
Windy up in this area, they're going to be gone. And those two words he told me, they come true. And the next one is the one, third one is going to be the caribou going to disappear.
Right.
They will never, you don't think they will come back.
This is what I'm getting at is something like some people in the world, premonition or they look at viscera of animals, and they know how to read signs. Or they look at the shoulder blades, capsulomancy, they know, look at the shoulder blades, and they see something of what's going to happen. Did you ever hear of anything like this?
I've heard rare little on that, but that can be kind of a rare belief of the
Uh-huh.
But sometimes it seems to be some feeling that something's going to happen.
Yeah.
And at times you don't even know exactly what it is, but it seems to happen. And you know, and I have to warn him for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, but I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think you do a
they use their amas for know, you know?
Yeah.
To know,
yeah, that people can see in here.
I think in specific cases, so.
Yeah.
That's
what I was saying. Just like I think, many old people really know when they're going to die, a few hours or a few days ahead of time. They can feel within themselves that life's process is slowing down.
Yeah, like in the case of my grandparents, I was raised by my grandparents, and I really wanted to go away to go to school. And they didn't allow me to go for a couple of years, but the desire to get an education was there. And finally, they consented to let me go. Now, as if they could look into the future, they admonished me. My grandmother told me that if I should become ill, that I should use my will to live if I ever became ill.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing my grandfather said is before I left, he had me make arrangements to start getting logs down here to build a house at Pauline George's in Nome. He said, in the future, when I came home, he wanted me to have a house to sleep in, as if he could see what my life was going to be, you know, that I would be coming here, but not living here, but he wanted me to have a house to sleep in. Now, as it turned out, I got pneumonia when I lived in the cold country, damp country down there, and evidently a tuberculosis scar that I had burst, and then I came down and had tuberculosis, you know, I had to rest. And because I didn't have the resistance, I was in the hospital a long time, and I had surgery and had different experiences where I had to use the will to live in order to survive. So I don't know if it was because that they knew me so well because they raised me, or if they felt inspired to advise me this way.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that they advised me happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That if I became ill, that I should use my willpower to overcome the illness.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was hard on the parents to lose an offspring, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that answers my question. Mm-hmm.
They used to say about an early day, malaria.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have a coma field. You never have a coma field like that, huh?
No. It's called a bad flight. A rough flight.
No.
A person named Manila.
Manila.
We do have some information on him on the work that I did this summer.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yes, you got it.
No.
You got the right answer to that.
The Amber people, the Kobuk people, he was a Kobuk person, and they considered him a prophet among the people because his powers were not like the rest of the Amatuk. It was they couldn't find it anywhere in the subterranean from where they had their powers. And when he was breaking the taboos, he traveled, and there were certain taboos, like the ladies, you know, in her monarchy,
mm-hmm.
when they had to stay by themselves, he said that, and the women who went to have their children in a little hut by themselves, he said eventually that would be no more, you know. And some other things that he foretold, okay, because some of these taboos that the medicine men imposed on the people were being broken, it angered them, and they wanted to destroy him. But and so they went looking for his powers and couldn't find it, and so they felt that his powers were from the upper direction, because the Amatuk had no power over a certain height, and he had a pole that he would stick on the ground, like a flagpole with a string on it, and when that string started, you know, even on a still day, when it started vibrating, then he knew there was a message. And then the thoughts would come to him, and he would start to prophesy, and that was his contact.
Hmm.
And so, for the people, he made life easier, much as those three brothers, who killed the animals that would kill the people, you know, and the monsters, you might say, the monsters of the area, including a huge bird that would take a man fly away with him. Where those three brothers took care of these beastie type of things, then this manita took care of the taboos, a certain area of the taboos that made life easier also for the Eskimo. And he also foretold that Ambler, at that time, you know, what was not a city, was not a village or anything, people used to camp there, but he said, in the future, Ambler will become a city. I can see the light from here up to the Jade Mountain. He said, and that's because of the activity of the mountains, in the mountains where the riches would be found, the city would grow. And so, about 1959 or 67, somewhere in that area, some families from Chungnat moved to Ambler because fishing is close, hunting is close, it's a good place to live. And several families have come in, so now they have quite a few left.
Yeah.
They have quite a few people, and others still coming in, and even some white people moving in. And there were
that's fairly close to the copper mine, is it not?
Yeah, and one of the first things that he prophesied was there would be a ship flying over the air, you know, he didn't know what else to call it. And he prophesied the coming of the airplane from the direction of Koba through the river. Yeah.
From the east.
And he said in it there would be a person that we could understand. There would be an Eskimo person in there also. And that's how it turned out. They flew over the river and landed there. And there was one Eskimo there that they could talk with.
You know who he was?
I could come and put their name.
Who was the Eskimo?
You remember him, maybe?
Yupep?
Yupep? Is not much. Damn it! You pay her to do the longer service amount of pay. I've got it written down in my literature anyway that I got from Ambler this summer and from Koba.
Do we have any dates when he lived or died? Is he this century? Must be with the airplane. To predict the airplane.
Must be very early in the 1900s. Eventually, he moved up to Northwest Territory in Canada.
Yeah.
And he has a granddaughter or something up at Barrow. He took his daughter and his son with him, and he went to Canada. And I think Delacite knows some of his descendants that she met up at Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they came over from Canada or if they lived there, but Andrew said something that I haven't heard, that you know, he lived in the days when the Eskimos slept on their on the floor, you know, but he had an elevated bed made of logs.
I think we're onto something here.
Mm-hmm.
Something of the thing that John is looking for.
Right.
Let's take a break for a moment, shall we? Yeah, I have a little coffee break.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just got the first plane to land in America.
Can you
tell you? I get to start home.
You have? Where did you get it? Was it a photograph?
I just photographed myself.
Mm-hmm. What year was this?
And for a while back, in the first plane landing in
Norway.
1923.
First plane here was 1924, wasn't it?
One of the things, one of the things that is yet to happen in his tradition, in his prophecy, is the sight of a whale, sight of a black whale to be seen up in that area. So now they don't know if it's going to actually be a real whale or something that looks like a whale. That's the kind of talk that I keep getting. Some people think it's going to be a real whale that'll surface up there, you know, and one of their waters, and others think it might be something else that looks like a whale, like a landing craft, a black landing craft or something. So so we don't know at this point.
Spaceship?
No, it's supposed to surface from the water.
Submarine?
But there are areas along the rivers where the earth is just floating, you know, and under is water, and that's how somewhere in the delta area of the Kobuk, you know, where some of the people have perished because they didn't know they camped on this floating tundra.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day some of them fell through and perished. And in that spot, once in a while, a skull will surface. Because there's still a movement, you know. I think that there'd be a lot more people today if these disasters like that had happened.
How widespread, how general is knowledge about Manila? Does everybody...
She knew of him. In fact, she reminded me of the whale.
So it's known to Kivalina and up the Kobuk,
uh-huh.
Noah Tass side,
uh-huh.
Buckland.
Oh yeah, I think Manila Finia. Does it make the sound of me what room? Because somebody mentioned about his breaking the taboos in the season of hunting the beluga. I don't know if it happened in Buckland or if it happened in Sicily. One of the two.
It does inquire into this.
Yeah, because
these are the things we're beginning to dig into.
Yeah. But if we read the translations of the work that I did this summer,
mm-hmm.
a lot of that information is in there.
Are there any other prophets like this that anybody knows about, like Manila, who were positive, not the evil medicine men, but were positive? Kind of a folk hero.
Let me look in your bed, in your cockpit. Manila is down with it now, it's a woman's stomach, or cut la wrong. There was Manila and his prophecies, okay? there were the three brothers and their fixing of the country, you know, making it safe from those beaches. There was also a Kayakal Mishluk, and they say there are the adventures of Kayakal Mishluk are so many that the old folks said they could tell one of a story about him every night for a month. And his thing mainly was fixing up nature, you might say, I think. Because he'd come to a group of people who had some kind of defect. And then when he was through and started to leave, he'd realize they'd either be a bird family or an animal family. And there's a long story on this also.
All right. This is extremely good.
Mm-hmm. When they tell me about him, he starts at Stonestook, and it's marked on the map where the Kayakal Mishluk starts from, you know, that's where he's born. And when his grandmother was a young girl, I guess she had always heard of the story too, and she went with some older kids, and they went up. And at that time, the logs, the posts of the house were still standing, and a lot of grass, you know, like grass will grow in a place where they once had a house. And some of the people, I guess, dug into it and found some artifacts from there. But right now, he says it's kind of a mound of gravel, you know.
I've been up there about a couple of years ago in that place there where they have sawing and stuff left.
Mm-hmm.
It's still up like that, you know, weird like that. That house, you can see, I mean, a big roof.
You can.
Yeah, it could be. Right behind that stone of silk. When I worked with Wisdom Village. And before that, I was there too when I was young. But like a few years ago, I was up there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's a truth.
It's a real person.
That's
and
a truth.
Even the Indians have stories about him because he also went to the Indian country. I think even Paul Green knows Kayakal Mishluk story.
A lot of people have heard about that.
Even though he grew up in Kivalina.
One time my father and his brother Nushup, they were telling that story when the moon comes up. Just when he comes out. So he told that story every night when the hunters come back. So when they get through with that story, the moon was all gone too.
Yeah, this is what they say in Selwyn, that you could tell the story, the adventures of Kayakal Mishluk, for a month, every night.
That's the truth.
Yeah. And this is what he just said. At the new moon, his grandfather started telling the story, and by the time they were through, was the end of the moon.
They can all our eyes. It's when you were thinking, they get stopped, and then there's a two people, three people, they're telling a story when the person
kind of tired. And they're meditating. That's first in place. And then they tell the story in 1 month.
Mm-hmm. There's so many other differences. I think what we need to do is try to get out as much of it, you know, and then mark on the map to travel.
Right.
Yeah. We have to complete that. We also have to complete the life of Manila and also those Iyaganek and Chuluk and Pugrabak, those three brothers, mark on the map where they lived and what they did. And there's also a story of the copper man with him.
Nobody knows where they come from. Never been told any story either.
They went up here.
Upatamana, Kibalinum, Nunanga, Sivira Mitra, Idna, we have from now until the 1st of July to still talk about all those historical places and cemetery sites, you know.
Makuninga kerumit supaya saya kasih mereka tak ko ini pangan ini unik tu, kamera yang ini kita cari kena, mobile phone lu jangan aja kasih. You know there was a village on the back of Kipolina River, on the North River, Coastal River that goes out to Point Hope. On the North River, at the Coastal, there's two rivers on Coastal, two. One comes towards the sea. One, they had a beach down there, one Coastal River is like this. On this side of that, on the mountain, on top of the mountain, there used to be a village about 6 inches there, on top of the mountain. Some people been living there way ahead of time, nobody knows that. And these posts were sticking up from that place. It was all rock, solid rock. I know where they come from. Nobody knows it, even in the story. And up in the river, on the other side of the mountain, well, I was hunting a fox. I saw a big pile like this. One certain place. And when I go over there to those places, it looked like a lumber. Looked like 2x12, 2x6, 2x8, but they were all plates. And 2x4. Just like that. They pile up on top of each other.
So it was an igloo made out of stone.
That was out of a stone. Mm-hmm. It was the north side of the Pitmiyan River.
All right.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
then you say about that? Then think that what the house is made out of stone, like They didn't call Edward Ramos and John Chapel, they didn't find the town of right inside of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
North side of Mount Hood, High Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You could better what they see than they see what it happened.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's what I heard. That's what he told me. Told me. I never seen myself.
Let me turn this off for a minute and ask. Percy, in American Indian history, you know Sequoia. They gave a Cherokee their alphabet.
Yes.
And I'm sure you know the story of Handsome Lake, the prophet to the Iroquois.
Well, I'm not too familiar with it right now, but I've heard read it before.
All right, now, but I, you know, I had the letter from my very senior professor suggesting that what we needed to find to pull the group of people together was some prophets. Now, those are the things that would make good motion pictures that would be useful and that would have meaning and give direction.
Yeah, if you're going to make a picture of a prophet, you got Manita.
Ah.
Yeah.
You got Manita.
Okay. This would be, this is the word.
And his powers were used for good, you know.
Right, then this is the kind of thing.
And then there's also the other side where the Amatok, you know, look for his power to destroy it, and he couldn't.
But then this would be a very good legend to make a picture of, and that would be within the line of the things that we can ask for funding for.
And he had sisters who were also descendants of them, like the Custers and the Douglases. You know Herbert Custer.
Yeah.
He's one of the descendants of the Custers. And also the Douglases, the Cleveland. They all know him, and their descendants are still alive, and you could get real person.
And we could come up with something. Maybe, I don't know. You remember the Freestone Lake picture? Whether we could reconstruct, this is what I'm asking. So I can think about planning something. Whether we could reconstruct by Bill Parkey, kayak. Whether we could reconstruct this, or whether we could do it by animation or parts. But I can certainly go back to Hollywood and find out how best to make this. But
this is one of the reasons why we have named our nonprofit corporation Manila.
Because it was a good.
Yeah. So for one thing, in today's language, Manila means no money, you know, which is no profit, non-profit. But in the real sense, because we wanted to honor an honorable man from
the
area,
that's
why we named
it. That's right,
the
name of Manila.
Right, then this becomes even more significant, that you've honored him, like the founding father kind of concept.
He prophesied that our life, the life of the Eskimos, would get better because these taboos would no longer have a hold on the people, and that they'd be traveling through the air and everything. Yeah.
And they are.
I think they used to say this right here, it sounds like that, like a radio. Did they know what to say about that?
I don't remember. Go ahead, talk about it.
Come on, tell us.
I mean, we could ask for the couple of people that went around here.
Well, no, I heard them say that there were some individuals that, up Koba, that it was just like having a radio in the house because they were able to go out and communicate.
Yeah. If they got a phone right now, they would just call up the Koba any place, you know, if they got a phone. I heard it that way too, but I'm not sure though. But you can tell me about Eric Kramer will be coming east from east. But that's right, you know. Like coast yet.
Do you see gears grinding in my brain? I do. I feel the gears grinding.
Yeah.
It's going around like this.
We need to research that with all the people who know the Manila story. because I think the last, there's just one more thing to happen, the whale. And then I think what he said after that was he couldn't see beyond that. What the next episode was beyond that.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's the one.
Yeah.
That's what they used to say that. After
yeah.
that,
yeah.
you can't see it over
here. That was the end of his vision.
Now, what does symbolically, the whale is black and rich and fat.
Some of them thought it might be a landing craft that they got up there one time, you know, with freight, you know, because it you let it open and it looked like it opened its mouth and then all the stuff comes out of it, you know, and it was painted black. Now, I don't know if that's what it means or if there literally will be a whale.
I was questioning whether in the absence of knowing of a mineral such as oil, he was predicting that something black and rich and fat would come,
mm-hmm.
which could be the oil. But that's another, is a possible interpretation. When you don't know what something is.
Anyway, he told the exact spot where it would be seen, where it would come up.
He did?
Yeah.
That's worth pondering. Isn't it?
Yes, it is. She keeps reminding me. she's familiar with it. She grew up in North Hat. She's lived in Civil War. She's lived in Norway. And she remembers for us today.
Very interesting. How do we best go out to collect those stories?
I think, let's see. Well, for a start, you can look into the work that I did this summer.
Yeah.
It's translated. And I think I translated that portion of it myself. It is Ambler. I translated Ambler myself because I felt that portion was important enough to be just as correct as they gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know. We could also probably send tapes to the three villages, Kobuk, Shungnak, and Ambler, and see if they have any other information that wasn't given.
Mm-hmm.
And have them put it on tape to us. You know, we can send them a copy of the information that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And ask them, do you have any other information for the sequence of his life, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of his movement,
mm-hmm.
where he went,
mm-hmm.
where he, what, if we can find out where he said what. And did he have any schooling at all, I wonder?
It would be interesting also to, if anybody knows his ancestry.
Yeah. Who his family, who his parents were,
mm-hmm.
grandparents, this is back to your genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
We're on to something. This was a good session this morning. We're on to something pretty good. Yeah, I thought we should. Let's take a little break. That's right. Oh, we can't work.
Thank you.
nó nằm mê tụ có, nó nằm mê tụ quên, nó rào lít. Thì giờ mình chỉ cháu phục hành lại như tụi chị lát.
Còn mình nâng lại nâng đầy rồi đó. Thì mấy, mà tụi mình cũng rạc, rạc tầm mái em bảo. Đã có lý mình nâng lý kích cho chăm mê dịch mà rạc, xong sẽ có chị vô nơi cháy. Mẹ tụi con đã lập chọc cái ngạc tụi mình nâng. Thì vòng ngầu vòng ngầu ta mê, thò gồm ra hoa. Nó ca tốt tình tình nó, mà ta tình mà ta. Nó dọc xe mở lên, dù vui dục ta ấm nó cũng tình nó lé rất vấn. Nó dọc xe mở ra hơi dục ta ấm nó, họ có thể tắm á. Nó dọc qua cái trần lò, họ ra tình ra cho nó, hoặc là ổn. Nó để cho hồn vô, cái chắc ta là người dịch tới cho mất mình nó đi. Thì dù xe mở ra thì xin nó ngã, ngã dọc ba nó đi.
Kita boleh pakai mata, kita boleh tangan, kita boleh.